Hello and welcome to All Right, Now What? I'm your host, Andrea Gunraj, for the Canadian Women's Foundation. Gender equality and justice where we live, work, learn, and play is the goal, and it makes life better for everyone. This podcast is our chance to connect with insightful people and explore what it'll take to get there in Canada. The work of the Canadian Women's Foundation and its partners takes place on traditional First Nations, Métis, and Inuit territories. We are grateful for the opportunity to meet and work on this land. However, we recognize that land acknowledgements are not enough. We need to pursue truth, reconciliation, decolonization, and allyship in an ongoing effort to make right with all our relations.
Let's say you're walking home one night, listening to some casual Beethoven, as one does. If you're a man, there's a good chance you'll hear it just like this. If you're not a man, there's a good chance you'll hear it more like this. Because women and gender-diverse people are expected to always keep one ear to the ground to reduce their chances of being attacked. Does that sound right to you? Visit awarepod.com to learn more and help fight gender-based violence.
Well, I am here with Jenna Barnable. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Andrea, for having me on.
My first question for you, what kind of gender equality change maker are you? You did the quiz. Love to hear your thoughts on the results.
You know what? This is such an insightful quiz, and my results came out pretty balanced with no real surprises. It feels representative of how I try to make change as a multiply disabled feminist inclusion advocate. So if you want, I can break it down a little bit for you. So I am 24% challenger. And when I was younger, I suspect this score would have been much higher. But as we know, time and experience changes the way that we challenge and fight for change. I'm still a fierce feminist. The difference now is my approach is different. And I feel like I'm more well-rounded, kind of a multidisciplinary feminist, if you will. And so I've learned to focus on being strategic and adaptable. We know that it's never a one-size-fits-all approach. When you're appealing to others and challenging systemic barriers, especially the longest standing ones that need to be dismantled, like colonialism, sexism, ableism, we know the drill. Sometimes you need a whisper, sometimes you need a roar, and sometimes you need any kind of a variety in between. So adapting our tactics as challengers is necessary to be heard, understood, and respected, and with that end goal of gaining allies who are going to join in with our challenging. And then I am 23% creator. Now, coming from a long line of artists and storytellers and educators and advocates, this makes good sense. It's in my blood. Creating is how I process things, how I communicate, even how I heal, and just how I share as a person. It comes out in my creative approach to problem solving and new innovative ways and approaches that I take through my advocacy work. And also when I'm storytelling to advance disability inclusion. So sometimes that storytelling is guest speaking at a university or an industry event, creating a piece of work for a community art exhibition, or maybe developing a disabled-centric and feminist social media content series. And when I do my social media work, I tackle topics like ableism and workplace discrimination, recognizing those red flags in intimate partner violence situations, advice on how to be a more supportive and more understanding community ally, or if you're a disabled person, a stronger self-advocate. And that's for people who live with disability. They have experience living with chronic illness, or perhaps they're neurodivergent. So my newest advocacy project where I blend creativity and activism is through producing and hosting my own podcast. It's called Finding Avalon. It's an indie, very grassroots, disabled-led feminist podcast. It's unapologetically feminist, and it centers diverse disabled perspectives and thought leadership. So really, whatever way the creative spark comes to me as an advocate, that storyteller side and creator side it just kicks in. And it's mainly how I know to communicate and to encourage critical thinking. Normalize talking about disability without stigma and shame, and also improving inclusion, however we can do that, you know, for real social change. Also, looking at my score here, I am also 30% collaborator. That's my highest score of the bunch. And so working for years in public relations, DEI, and community building, that really helped me grow as a collaborator. It taught me how important that is for really making change. I've always been an open and curious kind of person, wanting to learn new perspectives and different skills and different approaches. I mean, that's how we can grow and improve. It's how we can learn best, I believe, and how we can work together. This kind of collaborative approach broadens our outlook and it increases our chances at real change and actual progress. That's my opinion. I'll stand by it. 25 years of experiencing that in collaboration. And collaborators work together very well with each other. You know, they're flexible. It's important to be compassionate and fair and supportive. But at the same time, we also have to challenge each other within those structures, right? So I'm a kind-hearted person. I keep the big picture in mind. I'm very supportive. I'm that person who's going to support my teammates. But I also have no qualms in challenging the status quo. The minute I hear somebody say, but that's the way we've always done it, it activates me into, into that mode of challenging in healthy ways. And I always like to remind people that we are needing to consider inclusion and equality at all times, right? In everything that we're doing. That also includes encouraging people to resist groupthink. We all have biases, right? It's easy when you're in a collaborative situation to kind of go along with the group. But I really resist that, and I encourage people to resist it. And just generally, I try to be a straight shooter. So when we collaborate, the entire point is working together towards a common purpose and a common goal or a cause, that greater good. And ideally, you have gathered a diverse team with a combination of amazing skills and experiences and perspectives, but you're also operating on mutual trust and respect and openness, right? The result is so empowering from what I've experienced. I've seen how collaboration helps us accomplish truly impressive things. And that's how positive change happens in settings like this, because we really are better together. And Andrea, I'll mention my very last score. I am 23% connector. So I guess that speaks to my natural knack for bringing people together, matchmaking people or organizations or communities who would benefit from being introduced to each other, whether that's connecting people to resources, support, answers, or to each other. It always brings me a lot of joy if I'm able to do that. I don't believe in gatekeeping. That is not in my nature. I believe in doing whatever we can to share with each other and to remove barriers and avoid this siloing effect that can happen, right? So being a connector is so satisfying to me, especially when you see the impact it has improving someone's life or their path, whether it's potentially a new friendship, a community partnership, a learning opportunity, or maybe even a business connection. This benefits everyone. And if we can make that effort to connect and include, I think that we will be much better off for it as a community.
Jen, I'd love to hear about your deepest learnings. Tell me a bit about a core life lesson you bring in the effort to grow gender equality and justice in Canada today.
Mm-hmm. Wow, this is an excellent question. And of course, it's not easy to distill my life lessons when it comes to my work and my commitment to advancing gender equality. But when I think about it, one thing stands out, and it has stood out over the last 10 plus years. From what I've learned personally and in professional settings too, we could all benefit and grow from broadening our view of feminism. it's become clearer to me that we need to adapt our activism to close some significant gaps to make sure our feminism is including everyone. Everyone, not just some people. Everyone. Feminism must address the systemic inequalities and injustices that disabled women and gender diverse folks face so that we have the same rights, opportunities, access, and protections that feminism offers those who are non-disabled. It is crucial. Andrea, it's just crucial that we're not leaving anybody behind. And unfortunately, the reality is we currently are, and we historically have. So what do we do about that now? We have that awareness. I know great strides are being taken and efforts are there. The Canadian Women's Foundation, for example, is leading the charge in that. But we do need more engagement, participation, and support of that. Because a truly feminist movement must be intersectional and inclusive of all women and gender diverse folks. And this includes people who live with disability, chronic illness, neurodivergence, and who are otherwise marginalized. Disabled women and gender diverse people's voices have been historically, and still are today, routinely excluded and dismissed in feminist advocacy. I hate to say it, but it is something I have witnessed, learned, and experienced. And so that's why I wanted to bring that up. We do have to address and correct this within the movement. Just like casual sexism and internalized misogyny and unconscious biases exist all around us and even within us, so does ableism. And for people who aren't familiar with the term ableism, it's the belief that non-disabled people are superior and deserving of more rights and access, while disabled people are seen as less than, broken, a problem to be solved, even an afterthought. We all have biases and gaps in our understanding, especially around ableism. I can tell you myself, I'm learning and making mistakes all of the time. We all are. We're human. We have to give ourselves and each other that grace to make mistakes and to learn through that and to unlearn. So what I'd like to say is that we really, as feminists, need to challenge ourselves to address these gaps and these biases so that we can really commit to becoming actively anti-ableist. And I mentioned learning and unlearning, right? We have to do that to dismantle barriers and not uphold them, even if it's unconscious, even if it's unintentional. It is happening. And as feminists, we need to address this. I think that we could be doing much more to be inclusive of marginalized people. And that really includes being mindful to not invalidate or dismiss or isolate disabled women and gender diverse folks and their lived experiences. We have to be better at recognizing and honoring the intersectionality of those who are additionally marginalized and oppressed. And that's based on those intersecting layers of identity like race, age, gender, disability, sexual orientation, and so on. The whole list, right? I've learned as a woman, living with disability, as a queer woman, as a survivor of gender-based violence, and also as a DEI advocate, that there is still so much stigma and so many barriers that exist even within what's meant to be inclusive safe spaces like the feminist movement. All of us need to be protected, uplifted, offered equal opportunities, equitable opportunities, and accessibility. Because ableism or disability discrimination, it's so deeply ingrained in our society. And so, of course, it exists in feminist spaces too. So that's why in this core life lesson that I'm talking about, I feel like it's so important to include and consider, respect, and accept, right? Accept all women's voices. Rejecting outdated and incorrect stereotypes and those uninformed assumptions about disabled people, that has to end, right? We have to stop the stigma. And there are lots of risks and barriers that we face. And we also have needs and wishes and dreams and goals. And we want to be valued as feminists and human beings. So really just to close this up, I really believe that to make progress as feminists, we need to proactively and continuously learn about these things and broaden our view of who our feminism is including and protecting. And then act on that, not just think about it and learn about it and think about how we might make change, but actually start to act. And, you know, let's not forget that patriarchy, colonialism, capitalism, racism, sexism, ableism, all of those isms, those harmful social stigmas, these are all tightly intertwined and they all affect our feminism and our efforts for the cause. So without sugarcoating it, true feminism is united. It's accessible. And it includes the voices and leadership of marginalized women and gender diverse folks. And I don't have any doubt that we can do better and we will do better, right? To learn, change, adapt, and act. I think we're going to get there as inclusive feminists. And it can be daunting because there are so many things that we're trying to do as well. But I have such strong faith and belief in our ability to adapt and become actively anti-ableist and inclusive.
Let me ask you about what you're most passionate about. I feel I am hearing a lot of passion, but share with us what you're most passionate about and how that connects with gender equality.
Destigmatizing disability and feminism is something that motivates me on a deep level as a person and as an advocate too. I have lived experience and professional experience in the disability community, and I've witnessed the inequity and harm that disabled women and gender diverse people face. We know that we're living in a world that's dominated by oppressive systems. I talked about it earlier, patriarchy, colonialism, capitalism, racism, ableism, and that list goes on. Being a woman or a gender diverse person and living with disability in this hostile, oppressive environment unfortunately increases the adversity and systemic barriers we face. Disabled rights are human rights. And gender equality is woven into this too, of course. Disability rights are part of feminism and undeniably connected to gender equality and justice. Disabled women and gender diverse people are 3 times more likely to experience gender-based violence, especially sexual violence. And for Indigenous people, the risk is exorbitant. We're also twice as likely to experience intimate partner violence because our vulnerabilities are targeted by abusive, controlling predators who are overwhelmingly male. I have to say that right now. The risk of being killed is higher. And again, so much higher if you're an Indigenous woman, Two-Spirit, or gender diverse person. Neurodivergent girls and women and gender diverse folks are also at much elevated risk of sexual abuse, neglect, and trauma, whether that's at home, in the community, in the education system, anywhere out in the community. This is a sobering statistic that I'm going to give you right now, are 7 times more likely to die by suicide. 7 times more likely, because stigma and lack of support and understanding and so many significant barriers to care and accommodations exist. So sometimes people say, well, if you're a high masking autistic, you mustn't have many support needs. You mustn't need that support. When in fact, that rate, that statistic, 7 times more likely to die by suicide, to me, that screams we need support, right? Online bullying, digital hate, stalking, this all compounds it for girls and women and marginalized people like those of us who are disabled. Disabled women are also more likely to be abused in various ways by family members or their caretakers. Many are controlled and then fearful of speaking out and losing care or support or access. And in workplaces, disabled women are hired much less, paid less, have less job security, shorter careers due to barriers to accessibility and opportunities for career progression. They also face increased workplace harassment, including sexual harassment and bullied, and are routinely held back from career advancement. And Andrew, finally, gender inequality also means limited access to healthcare and much poorer health outcomes. I can't state this enough. I have lived it. I'm still living it. Women and disabled people in particular face overwhelming barriers in healthcare. And this is because of patriarchy and ableism. This can lead to delays in diagnosis, much worse health outcomes, and unnecessary suffering. And social discourse is finally becoming much louder. We're reaching a critical mass because women worldwide are sharing their experiences of feeling dismissed and disrespected by doctors, not having their valid, legitimate symptoms and pain taken seriously, while men receive much faster, better, and more thorough care and attention. Any marginalized person who has been in a healthcare setting has experienced this, but especially women and gender diverse people. So where do I come into this melee, you know, with my advocacy and activism? It's quite a situation to step into when you're also managing your own disability, your own health concerns, your own reality, you know, of how you show up and how you also take care of yourself. But what I do is I typically speak, I mentor, I create educational content for disabled people who are seeking support in their own self-advocacy efforts, and also those non-disabled community allies who want to learn how to become anti-ableist. How can I show up for you? How can I walk alongside of you? How can I support you in the community? Whatever that is, right? Essentially, I just want to make an impact with my anti-ableist advocacy and my feminism and how I combine those things.
That's wonderful. I mean, it brings us to our last question. All right, now what? This is what we close all of our episodes with because we need a powerful takeaway. We'd love to share this to our listeners. Based on your expertise, your lived experience, and all of the above, how can we become better gender equality change makers, no matter who we are, where we are?
For me, when it comes to disability, inclusion, feminism, activism, what's always stood out to me is that common theme of resilience and persistence. Very often, being resilient is our only option in the face of overwhelming social and systemic barriers. As a woman, as a disabled woman, I have lived it, I am living it. But we can use our pain and our resilience. They can be a potent combination for resistance. So recognizing that these barriers need to be dismantled is the first step. Making the decision to be part of that solution is a pivotal next step to making change. We need disruptors and defenders to help end ableism and disability discrimination. You know, just as much as we need change makers and challengers to work together to put an end to gender inequality and to misogyny. Anybody can be a change maker. You don't need to be some kind of a superhero to defend human rights and to fight for gender equality. Sometimes it starts with a story. That's how I began, as a young woman experiencing disability and the discrimination that came with it in all corners of our society. Andrea, I'll tell you this, ableism and stigma hold us back and harm us far more than our own disabilities or conditions do. I'm still shocked by the casual ableism I experience and witness out in the community and in supposedly safe spaces that claim to be DEI focused and, you know, and a place where you're meant to belong. And even in the professional world, it has been a continuous eye-opener. And not in a good way. So that really drives me as an advocate and an activist. And as my life unfolded and my story unfolded, and I experienced the danger and the deeply shocking and painful trauma of being a disabled, chronically ill, and autistic woman in an intimate partner relationship, I couldn't believe that that was my reality. I never imagined that that could happen to me. And anyone in that situation, whether you're disabled or not, likely thinks the same thing. How did this happen, right? I'm what a survivor looks like. And I'm what a disabled person looks like. I'm what a feminist looks like. even though so often people have a stereotype in mind or an immediate judgment, right? I want to banish that shame and judgment. And as Gisèle Pelicot said recently, the shame sits with the abusers. Our stories are part of our power when they're told in safe spaces, when protected in solidarity, and in movements like feminism and anti-ableism. So my takeaway is this. There is so much power in storytelling. It's a universal act of connecting, no matter how different we might be. Stories can move us, help heal us, make it easier to relate to one another, educate each other, and learn new perspectives. Stories let us know that we are not alone. They carry the ideas that can fuel protests and become the tool for collective change. Stories become news headlines, guidebooks, action plans, policies and legislation, manifestos, rally cries, and a loud warning to those who harm and oppress us. Stories are also the personal tales that will be told about us for generations to come, that help protect others, help them feel seen and less alone, and make it known how we made a stand in our own way, whatever form that may take. What matters is we use our voices and take personal action. It can be done quietly, loudly, however feels right to you. So when you're ready and when you feel safe to, I hope you tell your story, because your voice is more powerful than you know. And the storyteller inside you today can become the change maker tomorrow.
All right, now what? If you want to make sure no woman, girl, two-spirit, trans, or non-binary person feels out of options, out of sight, out of time, or out of mind, visit yescountmein.ca. When you count yourself in, you'll join over 104,000 people in the Canadian Women's Foundation's community. You'll get tools and opportunities to advance gender equality. This movement needs you. Visit yescountmein.ca and count yourself in today. Please listen, subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. If you appreciate this content, please consider becoming a donor to the Canadian Women's Foundation. People like you will make the goal of gender equality a reality. Visit CanadianWomen.org to give today, and thank you for your support.